Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Good morning, everyone. This is Lynn Kerrigan, your host today for the Brown Briefly. And that was the voice of Brian Brown, who was our fond leader, who's not been with us for 2 years now. He's passed away and left us with the legacy of trying to really stand for an independent journalism with balanced views of hopefully sometimes both sides of an issue, with civil discourse and kind of the pursuit of curiosity and intellectual balance rather than a lot of emotional hate-filled rhetoric. We have a good time covering national, local, state affairs, and which includes news and local happenings, and we welcome all of our viewers from Vachon, viewers, our listeners from Vachon and parts unknown. With me in the studio today is Truman O'Brien, the captain of the airwaves, who has had some pretty interesting adventures. I'm going to swing back to you, Truman, in about 1 second.
Okay.
And I just want to mention Bruce Holman, our guardian of the galaxy, historian and representative of the Vachon Heritage Museum and author. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning.
And Gail, I'll swing back to y'all, too. I just wanted to say good morning to Gail Kellner, author, former teacher, and poet extraordinaire. How are you, Gail?
Good morning. I'm doing well, thank you.
Good.
Nice to see you all this morning.
Thank you. Nice to be here. And Truman, I wanted to swing back around to you because there's a couple of things I hope that you will talk to us about a little bit from your experience in the air and crashing into those trees, which led to a phone call getting you to go to or commanding you to go meet with the FBI and the DEA, and Drug Enforcement Administration, two weeks ago. That's why I wasn't here 2 weeks ago. So, Truman, I want to hear about that and a little bit about the Growler electronic warfare airplane that I saw in the paper today has just gone off from Whidbey Island to Germany.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things. We we got an email from the woman who was the head of the aviation department for the Seattle and Portland field offices of the FBI. And she sent Craig and me a note saying, I read the article and I heard, saw the videos about your crash down in south of St. Helens, and I was wondering if you'd be willing. We're having a safety stand down. It was two Tuesdays ago, and she said for the Seattle and Portland offices, and we'd like you guys to come in and chat with us about the incident. And she said I was impressed with the way you guys handled yourselves, and we'd just like to hear about it. So Craig and I said sure. So we put together a little PowerPoint presentation and practiced a little bit about telling our story, but we went in, and then right before we got there we get another email from her saying, well, you guys are drawing quite a crowd. She said now the flight offices of the Seattle and Portland DEA want to join us. So we had about 25 people there, and actually, you know, we took it pretty seriously, and one of the things that I had taken the Saturday before, I had gone to an FAA program of mountain flying program. And in that program, they talked about all of the procedures and things that you should do to safely fly in the mountains. And so, but they didn't talk about crashing in the mountains. And so when we started our talk with the FBI and the DEA folks, we said, the FAA has this program that teaches how to fly in the mountains. We're going to teach you how to fail to fly in the mountains. And so we a couple of things we did is this was very interesting to me. I put up a slide that had a photograph of the forest, an aerial shot of the forest. And on one side of the slide was forest, you know, heavily forested. And on the other side was a clear cut that had been replanted and was starting to grow. And I labeled one A and one B. And I said to the folks, I said, okay, how many of you would choose to make your emergency landing in on A? That was the forested side. No one raised their hands. Not one. I said, okay, how many in B? And of course, they all raised their hands. I said, okay, well, now let me show you a picture of B from the ground. Mm-hmm. And I showed them what a clear cut looked like on the ground with all the stumps. And rocks. And yeah. And then I showed them a photograph, an aerial photograph of a clear cut that had just been finished. So it had all these big piles of logs. And mm-hmm. I said, so that's what you just chose, folks. And then I showed them, talked about the other side and showed them the difference between the way the trees looked. There was a stand of trees that were all exactly the same height. They were light green, which meant they were young trees. They were right next to a road. I said, believe me, if I had this to do over again, that would be where I'd go, in that spot right there. And now here's the kicker. I talked about, I don't think I talked about this before, about deceleration. Did I talk about this last time?
I don't remember it. Go ahead.
Well, this is, we found out later, Craig did a little research and found out that the structure of the airplane is built such that it should sustain 9 Gs easily. And of course, the human body will stand 9 Gs, no problem. Fighter pilots do that all the time. So if you're going 50 miles an hour and you're going to go from 50 miles an hour down to zero and decelerate evenly, you know, over that span, I asked them the question, how far would you travel in terms of feet or miles or whatever? How far would you travel in order to not pull more than 9 Gs to go from 50 to zero? And most of them said, 100 yards, 200 feet. I mean, we had all these guesses. Well, are you ready for this? The answer is 9.4 feet.
Oh, my gosh. Are you kidding?
No. That's all the distance it takes to go from 50 to zero and not pull more than 9 Gs. So when we went into those trees, I'm sure that we went in, you know, we probably went 20, 30 feet easily, taking out treetop branches and stuff as we slowed. So consequently, we were decelerating at a much lesser degree than 9 Gs. Of course, we had little bumps in there, you know, as we hit bigger things. But still, that's why our emergency locator didn't go off. So we didn't have that really hard deceleration. So anyway, I thought that was pretty fascinating.
No kidding. Good way of teaching too.
Yeah, it worked. It worked. They were impressed with the idea. And one of the guys said, "Hey, we saw your video, and the first thing that I did is I went out to Harbor Freight Tools and I bought some of those reflective vests to add to our survival kit."
No kidding.
I said, "Just don't put a badge on it; they'll think you're part of the rescue crew." So anyway. Wow. Pretty interesting. And one quick question or response to your Growler airplane. These are the F-18, that's our premier fighter prior to our new F-22 and F-35. But that airplane they have now equipped as a jammer. And those things can jam signals for, they jam radar and they jam other electric detection equipment. And they could actually knock out all of their stuff from the Poland border if they really wanted to.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I hear the Growler is going to Germany.
Yeah.
And I also read that they're wondering whether Putin may be launching a cyber attack at some point. You know, there's all this speculation. I'm just wondering under what conditions they use this jammer.
They could use it right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
Blocking all the transport and all the communications if they want. Wow.
Yep.
It's an interesting time.
Indeed.
Bruce and Gail, I want to call you back in and hear how your week has gone and kind of what's going on in Vashon. What have you noticed? What have you observed? Bruce, can you go?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, it feels like Vashon's opening up.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been out, you know, if you've been uptown and into restaurants or the movie theater. I mean, whether the pandemic's over or not, I think people sort of feel like it's over. And so it's going to be interesting to watch what happens with infection rates and that kind of thing on Vashon. I mean, we're all highly vaccinated, 93-94% right. of the island's vaccinated, and, you know, and a high percentage is boosted, and except for the little kids who haven't, under five, who have not been vaccinated yet. Most people are. And so, even if there is an uptick, it probably won't be severe, it won't be extended, but at the same time, it's going to be interesting to watch. I think people are just ready. And of course, spring coming, flowers are out, trees are blooming, that sort of adds to it. Plus, it's not dark at 4:30 in the afternoon.
No kidding.
That's right.
So it's just an interesting time, sort of, as a historian and watching how an island responds to an emergency and just sort of seeing how that sort of switch goes on, and all of a sudden people are done with it.
Well, we'll see. There's that BA2 variant lurking out there, headed our way probably, but I think people are confident that, we now have a fourth booster on the way. People are vaccinated, people are boosted, people kind of know the drill. So hopefully we'll be able to respond appropriately if it comes.
I find one thing kind of interesting, and that is that, for the past 2 years, there has been very few flu, a big flu epidemic, and very few people have had colds. I mean, I haven't had a cold, and I knock on wood, for a couple of years. And I'm going to be real curious to see what happens once these masks come off and see what people, what happens with flu and colds. So.
That's right. And Gail. Good morning, and fill us in. What you've been doing this week, and what have you been noticing and observing?
Well, I think the thing that has caught most of my attention has been the aerial flights of the bees are returning. So they've come out of hibernation about this time of year around Vashon. So that's been wonderful to see. So I have a little bumblebee nest that is beginning to be active. So that's been fun to watch. And I don't know if the FAA controls those or has a policy on that.
You'll
have to fill me in from but yeah, with the maple trees budding, that's a source of food for them, as well as some of the flowering plants and things coming out. Saw leaves on my apple tree, and I just wanted to mention I was reading the New York Times an interesting article about No Mow May that they've started back in some places on the east. Bruce is nodding his head, he's heard of this. And instead of mowing your lawn, they encourage people, particularly in the month of May, for us we're a little earlier, so April is excellent for us, it's not to mow our lawns, to let them grow, to leave the dandelions in place.
Feed the bees.
They provide early foraging food for the bees, the dandelions in particular. So does clover, which is often found in lawns. So if you can leave those early flowering weeds alone, they are really actually very helpful for both our honeybee populations as well as our native bee populations. So
yeah,
that's what I've been noticing.
Huh.
I'm looking forward to little tiny bee drones. This is my idea, that as we go further into drones and drone warfare, that we'll start disguising them as crows and bees and be a little more cynical about seeing the new bees coming out. Well, I had a great time this week. I actually just wanted to mention, thanks to Eileen Wolcott at the Vashon Theater, I went Saturday and sat through 5 hours of the opera Don Carlos, which was fabulous. But she's been hosting that New York Metropolitan Opera streaming series all winter, which has just been delightful. What a great way to see world-class opera, except at 9 in the morning, I was almost sleeping through the last and final hour. And I noticed that she has not let cars back in that parking area that is next to the theater and used to just be where we'd scream in there and park and run for the theater. And now in The Beachcomber, last week or so, I read that she's planning to develop that as a sort of a community space for arts and crafts and other kinds of events, maybe outdoor movies. Have y'all heard about that? You know, what do you think about that? What could that be used for? Because it sounds like she's launching it to support the theater, which, you know, of course, has been down in attendance recently, and there's this prime real estate right between, you know, us and the theater. So, you know, what do you think about that? I thought that was kind of a clever idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. And it's been used in the past as part of festival for the youth stage and those kind of things. And so it's actually, I think it's a good indication of, as we emerge from COVID into what a new normal is going to be, you're going to see things like that. You know, I think Cliff's outdoor dining, you know, the kind of things that you see up at Vachon Pub, Brewery Pub, those are not going to go away. It's going to be the sort of new world we live in. And I think Eileen's great idea. And Lynn, I was just talking with Ron Irving yesterday. It's where we should do our next Chautauqua.
What a great idea.
You got downtown parking, you got food, you got, you know, so let's get the Chautauqua organized again.
Yeah.
Because it's a perfect venue for it.
Yes, it would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah. O-Spaces explored, like last summer, they did a number of outdoor drama productions and very successful. And so I just think it's a sense of, you know, we're not in Florida, so it's not going to be 724, 12 months a year, but at least 3 or 4 months a year, yeah, is going to be a real option and the new normal, I think, for us.
Cool.
Gail, go ahead.
Oh, it makes me very happy to hear that someone be using something that had once been a parking lot to in a downtown area like that for something like arts and crafts or community oriented activities. So I'm always happy to hear when we can nudge our cars out of the center of town and allow more space for humans to enjoy each other and the businesses that are there.
I challenge you, and I will go with you, to write a reverse "They Pave Paradise and Put Up a Parking Lot" song. A poem from you. I'm going to ask for that next time. Well, I'm going to move us along into some other, you know, state and national issues. I kind of want to mention this was, I was kind of writing down that was the week that was. You know, this is now, it's been an interesting and weird week. We have declared pickleball as the official Washington national sport. Trump has been seen by a California district judge as likely having committed felonies in obstructing Congress and trying to conspire to overthrow a federal election. Putin is withdrawing from Kiev. Biden is getting very strong in his moral outrage, is what he attributed his sentence to, as to Putin cannot remain in power. And yet what people are talking about that my neighbors and people are mentioning is the Oscar slap by Will Smith to Chris Rock for dissing his wife. So it's just kind of a wild time right now. And I was looking at some of the state news before we move on to some federal, just kind of briefly. I noticed that there in the legislature has been, you know, as we're reviewing what happened this year, that Inslee has rolled back some of the police reforms that were passed really fast last year. In particular, I'm talking about the use of force bill, which really confused the police and has taken that particular bill off and apparently is trying to better define what use of force exactly is and be really clear what police can and can't do with their roles, as well as the magazines. Did any of you remember any of the other public safety and kind of other legislative things that we should mention? I know we talked a bit last week about some of these, the banning of the high-capacity magazines. Is there anything else that has struck you that came from this legislature? I can't think of anything else either. But I was glad to hear that there's some debate now on some of the gun safety concerns that, you know, we really kind of swung our pendulum back and forth. And I'm hoping that we can find a good center for that. And there's also some strikes coming up. The concrete workers are still on strike about the West Seattle Bridge completion. It was due to be finished this spring, and the dock workers are potentially about to strike. And, you know, it's just struck me that here we are. I certainly have been supporting unions my entire life. I think it's a great way to balance a capitalist society with looking after the wages and conditions of laborers. But I also want that West Seattle Bridge completed.
Yeah, boy, don't we all?
I could just barely even hear that that's going to be delayed. Any comments or questions or issues? Gail?
Oh, I just would add that I know that it is inconvenient, terribly inconvenient for many people, and I don't take that lightly, having been a commuter myself across that bridge for many years. However, I am a big supporter of unions, and I feel that if you have to have some means of grabbing people's attention, and it usually has to be around an issue that affects people directly in order for it to get in the news and to get the needed reforms. And I don't know the particular conditions or exactly what the cement workers are striking for, but I, in general, agree with you completely, Lynn. Unions are so important, and they're making quite a comeback now, I understand, in a number of places. Thank goodness. So, mm-hmm. so important for protecting workers.
Yeah, it seems to be emerging again, and I will just watch with interest about the Amazon, especially the company that has very high injury rates, and people are asking to unionize in various locations regarding Amazon, too. You know, it's going to be interesting.
There. Go ahead.
Sure.
Well, I think it's important to put it in context. I mean, you know, it's not just a strike by cement workers or a strike by, you know, longshoremen or drivers for containers and stuff like that. I mean, we're at the end of a major pandemic that has turned, you know, the world upside down on its head, and the Great Resignation, as it's been called. You know, I mean, it's a fundamental change in the nature of the relationship between people and work. And you know, when you step back and look at what's happening now in that context, we're going to see a number of years, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years, maybe 10 years of a readjustment taking place in the way in which people define work, in the way work is compensated, in the way work is defined. And, right. you know, think, you know, that, you know, a concrete strike is you know, is anything more than just the beginning of a large sort of shift. It's sort of myopic, I think, you know, I mean, the West Seattle Bridge, we may not even need the West Seattle Bridge to be serious about it, if indeed mass transit, if working from home, if commuting, as we've known it in the past, begins to come to an end, like it seems to be, then the West Seattle Bridge is not an essential part of our transportation structure. So it's really interesting when you step back and try and take a long perspective on it. Is this all just sort of ripples on the surface? Are these sort of hiding a monumental tsunami that's coming along that's fundamentally going to change the way we live? And you see that in the Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine is just the first of a beginning wave of sort of, you know, what I would call right-wing nationalist sort of attempts to control their own destiny. And Russia is always been threatened from the West. I mean, it's a long-term sort of fear going back to, well, back almost 1,000 years. There's a fantastic sort of animated map of Europe over the last 1,000 years that takes place over about 3 minutes, and you watch the borders over 1,000 years, and that's been disputed territory. for you know, 1,000 years, basically. Yeah. So what we're seeing right now is the beginning of a fundamental shift in paradigm. And it's important to keep that in context. Not look at what's going to just happen, you know, next year.
Well, you know, there's many ways of looking at things. I think that for me, there's a feeling element that is important to recognize that everybody's struggling with feeling elements of all of this, and it takes some discipline, I think, and some deep digs into research to pull back and, you know, have that longer view if you're impacted by, you know, all these four wars that I hear, you know, people are talking about. Biden is having to fight, you know, the economic war and the globalization issues, and he's having to fight the COVID pandemic, and now, you know, he's in Ukraine. It can be overwhelming, and I think there's a spectrum of reactions to all of this, and it's always good to have some context and long views of things. It's calming, but I'm also in support of, you know, women's ways of knowing, which are also, I don't know, sometimes a little more intuitive and maybe a little more reactive, I would say. But I will say probably represent a lot of people's points of reference. And that's partially why I like doing this show, is to hear multiple perspectives on these issues so everybody can learn something new about how we can manage ourselves in times like this. And Bruce, since you went to the Ukraine, let's leap to that for just a minute. Spend some time on what you were talking about, the ancient territorial grabs, I guess, you know, in Eastern Europe, and you know, the terrible displacement of people and the spheres of influence that were created after World War One and Two that really weren't with people's consent. They were very, people have to accommodate all of this. And, you know, it's just a tense time. And yet I heard last night there were talks in Istanbul that have now resulted in some kind of shift where Putin is having his troops pull back from Kiev and go to the Donbas region, which has been the one that's been occupied by the Russians and separatists. And so things are shifting. I've been really wondering whether the sanctions are going to work here. And I'm just wondering if anybody's read a little bit more about that or has thoughts about, you know, kind of what is happening there with some of the changes to this power grab that Putin has made. Truman.
The one thing that that really bothered me last night, I heard on the news, they were interviewing a, gosh, now I don't remember who she was, but anyway, a Russian, and she was saying that 80% of the Russian people are supporting the war in Ukraine.
Well, yeah, they're told to. Well, if they don't, they're going to be in prison.
No, it's more than that. They believe that, I mean, they're getting conspiracy theories that like we're getting QAnon here. They're getting that sort of stuff there, and they're believing it, and they are in support of the, and you know, we keep thinking, well, how can they possibly support this, you know, genocide that's going on? But the perspective that they're getting is that it's a worthwhile thing, that the Ukrainians were going to attack them if they didn't get them first. I mean, I find that absolutely astounding that would be the case. But that's what they're saying. Pretty interesting.
Also, Bruce, go ahead.
You could also put it in the context of, you know, most Russians think of the Ukraine as Russia, you know, sort of you know, Arkansas, if you will. It's the wheat belt of Russia, and has not been a separate country through much of its history. You know, it's been part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, it's been part of the British Empire, it was part of the, you know, the Muscovy Empire. I mean, you know, back over 1,000 years, you look at that area in there, very fertile, you know, highly fought over. And so Ukrainians think of themselves as a separate country, and see themselves as a separate culture and have for, you know, 1,000 years, but Russians have you know, over the last 600-700 years have seen it as part of Russia. And that's what's really at the core of sort of, I think, Russian attitudes, is how can those Ukrainians not want to join with the motherland? You know, they're part of us. That's a tough one.
Yeah,
you know,
it is.
Texas is part of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Gail, did you have a comment too back there?
I think, you know, what strikes me is the disinformation that Putin probably is spreading, as he did, you know, in the United States, particularly in the 2016 election. You know, so I'm not surprised that that there is a lot of disinformation going on out, you know, in that region. And I think you have to somehow justify in your mind or in the minds of people what's going on. And so this, if it takes disinformation to do that, I think Putin's willing. And the problem for me is that I don't really believe it's an issue between the Russian people and the Ukrainians. I mean, there's many ways to be together and work cooperatively. You know, if that's a very rich area in one way, for example, like it is, you know, their sort of bread, their bread belt, that's there. It's the place where so much wheat and so much of the resource, agricultural resources are so strong. You don't have to invade another country to buy bread from them. And, you know, and I think Putin is a dictator, and he enjoys power, and he likes power grabs. And, you know, I think for him, he's somewhat immune to the suffering that he's causing. He's sitting back. He doesn't care about those kind of things. He's interested in his own power.
Yeah, the New York Times had a really excellent, like, 3-page article on the history of Putin's evolution from KGB agent to president, and talked a lot about how disaffected he felt by the U.S. rise of power and feeling shut out of, you know, being a world leader, and, you know, that in his mind he is trying to put Russia back in power. And if that means people have to be afraid of him and, you know, watch what his, you know, what he's willing to do to achieve his ends. You know, I think one of the things that I have been wondering about is how in the world do you negotiate with a dictator? You know, with somebody who doesn't have the same values or morals or whatever that, you know, the West and its rule-based sort of format of law and justice. How do you even begin to dictate,
strength on strength, you know. So you have to approach him. He's a strong man. You have to approach him as a stronger man. Or, you know, I mean, I think that's about all that you can do. I mean, what else is there? If he says, I'm going to drop nukes, you go, okay, we got more nukes than you do. You know, what do you want to do? I mean, I don't know. That seems about the only thing that you can do. How about you, Bruce? I mean, you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's difficult. And I mean, you know, the example everybody uses is Chamberlain and Hitler in World War II. You know, you just you can't back off from, you know, an expansionist sort of power. You know, and a lot of people fault Obama for not responding to the Crimea. Mm-hmm. Not much he could have done, you know, what happened in Crimea and sort of the struggle that's been going on in the Donbas and that sort of eastern part of Ukraine, you know, ever since, has been a separatist kind of civil war going on. So it's difficult to know how to respond, but I think what we're seeing right now, I think the response is appropriate. You know, the Ukrainians are willing to defend their country. And if we give them the means of defending their country, which we are doing with military support and Stinger missiles and anti-tank, you know, rockets and things like that, I mean, they've brought the fabled Red Army to a standstill, you know, and that's what I think worries me and worries a lot of observers is, you know, what do you do in a military stalemate? You sort of normal new boundaries, or you turn to chemical nuclear weapons. And so those are the three options. I don't have an answer,
no.
but I think this could spiral out of control very easily.
It's a terrible dilemma, I sort of feel, and I think a lot about the nuclear threats, the nuclear war threats, and, you know, makes me feel like we're already in the middle of World War III, maybe at the beginning, and hoping to deter that, and hoping to figure out what will deter that. You know, because what I've read in that New York Times article said, you know, Putin's putting everything, he's putting all his chips on the table, and that he either has to win or he's done, the way the Russian economy and the Russian system works. And that puts him in a pretty terrible position. So I'm very eager to hear a little bit more about the negotiations that happened as we were sleeping last night, in, you know, what they were talking about in Istanbul, and we can come back to that. But I don't know, I just feel there's some irony there. You know, we dropped the first nuclear bomb on people, and then, you know, have been fearful of it ever since. And it doesn't seem to deter Putin in any way. He sounds willing to go there. We'll see if that's bluff or, you know, bluff and posturing or not. Gail, you have thoughts?
I do. I mean, I think, you know, Putin may be a world leader, but he's also something of simply a bully, you know. And I think that, like, in you have to do in any situation where you have a bully, you have to stand up in a united front against that. That is really the only way to stop them, is, you know. And I think that that's, you know, the importance of NATO, potentially the United Nations, certainly the economic sanctions worldwide, that bullies can be stopped, but it takes a united effort.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
It's a great book that's sort of, you know, not a great book, but an interesting book called All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten.
Yeah.
About fighting bullies.
In 1990, you know, I mean, 30 years ago, 32 years ago now, when it was published. But it really is that, you know, you don't hit anybody. Will Smith was way out of line.
Yes,
you know,
he was.
You just don't hit anybody. You don't take your neighbor's pencils or crayons. Putin's way out of line. I mean, it's sort of like, let's go back to some basic moral value lessons that everybody learns in kindergarten and start applying them to the world. And in kindergarten, there's consequences when you transgress those boundaries. And there need to be consequences in the real world. You know, when a justice of the Supreme Court's wife becomes a spokesperson for QAnon theory,
kidding.
There's something wrong with the values of having that person sit on the court unencumbered.
Thank you for bringing that up.
So we just need to deal with those things.
Yeah. I think that the last thing I kind of want to say about Putin and the way we have been working is I've been looking at Madeleine Albright's resume, because she died recently at age 84, and she was the Secretary of State, and before that a UN ambassador appointed by Obama, and she served during the Clinton administration as well. I think her Secretary of State was 2009 to 2013, and she was able to be kind of quite successful in contributing to the resolution of the Bosnia-Herzegovina warfare. She's written a tremendous book called On Fascism that I'd like to look at. She kind of had, you know, a very strong reputation because she was a Czech immigrant and she knew Eastern Europe, and she kind of pulled no punches, as I understand it. And so hats off to you, Madeleine. And it kind of also, Bruce, what you're talking about made me think of, you know, the despicable questioning by the Senate about the confirmation of Ketanji Brown Jackson, posturing, you know, about her some few cases they were making an example of where they wanted to make her look soft on crime and yet pull these kind of stunts where they support people who are conspiracy theorists and, you know, back Trump even and his own opinions and actions. Truman.
Here's what I think about that. I think that is just an excuse for them to be able to pontificate about their own positions. I don't think mm-hmm. it has a thing to do with her mm-hmm. confirmation or her qualifications or anything else. It was simply a stage for them to perform. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I agree with you, Truman, on that. So I have to say, using a woman and a black woman in that way mm-hmm. so publicly, oh. I mm-hmm. was completely disgusted. Oh, yeah. I had a difficult time watching the hearings. Their constant, particularly their constant interrupting of her and demeaning of yeah. her, while being ultra polite, so they would say, but their actions were completely yeah. Dismissive of her as a person and as, you know, and lacked respect, you know, simply. So it was inexcusable to me. I was really disturbed by it.
How do you think having a black woman on the Supreme Court will affect, you know, rulings or the balance of power within the Supreme Court? What does she have to do battle about there? And, you know, she seemed very poised and clear. And I am proud that Biden has nominated her. I hope that they will confirm her, but I'm kind of curious what you think about her role on the court and where she may go with her positioning.
I want to throw one thing out, sure. And that is that in my experience that when a person gets put into that situation, of course we all have filters that we, you know, that we, for what we take in and what comes back out of us. I mean, there are those filters, but when they get in that situation, they tend to take on the role of that position, and they tend to consider the things that are in that position so that their own personal stuff tends to not come in as much as we might anticipate. I mean, I've seen that happen with other politicians, and I think that may happen there as well. Of course, it's going to be skewed because of their filters that I was talking about, but still, I think most, for the most part, they do the job as it's required.
Yeah, Gail?
I would tend to agree with that. There seems to be something in the office or position that mm-hmm. draws a person to their highest best self. Exactly. But I have to say, it pleases me to no end to have a woman, have a black woman, yeah. bring her experience. Because yeah. that is a significantly different experience than the white male experience in America. And that is a helpful and important voice to be had in our
leadership. Yeah, I agree.
You know, there's the famous 30% rule in corporate boards, any boards, in fact, and that if 30% of the board is made up of diverse people and women, the nature of decisions change. Yeah. And for the first time ever, we're going to see a 30% of a third of the Supreme Court are women, you know, and a range of women, you know,
that's right.
You know, a brown woman, a black woman, a conservative white woman. And I suspect we'll see another Biden appointment to the court here relatively soon. And so it's going to really change the nature of what the court decisions are.
Well, we have a lot to keep an eye on, and we intend to hold people accountable for their ridiculous actions, and we hope you'll stay tuned and join us next week. And on behalf of Bruce, Truman, and Gail, I say goodnight from this, or I guess it's just afternoon.
Yeah.
And what do we hear here from the Beatles?
Okay.
To Putin's national battle anthem.
See you guys next week.
Good job.